Everybody, welcome to Two Out the First. It's January 9th, 2024. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Thanks for tuning in today. We have a couple things to talk about. One we didn't get to yesterday because I recorded before it happened, and that's Tiger Woods and Nike split up, and we'll talk about that and what's next. And that's the prevailing story, really, from yesterday, I think. We got into Patrick Reed getting that Friday news dump and having to pay court costs, and he's appealed that, and that's yesterday's episode. And that was kind of a backfill from the weekend because I didn't really want to do a Saturday show just to stomp on Patrick Reed. That felt like a little too much, even though the thought did cross my mind. But this news yesterday I think is very important. It's substantial. It means something to people my age because I've watched Tiger Woods' entire professional career. He was an inspiration, remains in some ways an inspiration in golf to me as a 40-year-old person, nearly 41 years old, and the entirety of his professional career was spent to this point wearing Nike Golf. Every single iconic moment that I can think of in Woods' career, I think of a scene where there's a swoosh in it, whether it's the fist pump in the 97 Masters in that huge red sweat that he wore that Sunday, whether it's the fist pump kind of out looking toward the sunset as he completed the Tiger Slam, whether it's him kind of pulling his fists in and out as the bumpy putt along the POA goes in to force the playoff at Torrey, or it's him kind of earlier in that tournament kneeling over his wedge and he's laughing as the ball chips in. I think it was an eagle chip. But again, Nike logo. And then, of course, wearing the mock turtleneck to win the 2019 Masters in probably what will go down as most people's favorite major, or a lot of people's favorite major of my generation. I understand the 86 Masters, and I love the 86 Masters, but Nike logo there. And all of that value will remain forever, even though Tiger and Nike are no longer in an agreement together to help make each other some money. So I had tweeted at the beginning of the year that Tiger Woods was still featured on Nike's website and was wondering whether this agreement ended on a weird date, or maybe they had come to an agreement to extend, and both of those things didn't turn out necessarily to be the case. Sounds like his agreement did end at the end of 2023, and maybe they just wanted to kind of let it breathe for a little bit, or maybe there was an offer on the table. It's not exactly clear. There could have been an offer on the table from Nike and said, look, let the contract expire. We'll honor it and everything. We'll do it for a week and then see if you want to keep going. Here's our offer. Mark Steinberg, who's Tiger Woods' agent, has represented him forever, basically. Not always, but almost forever. He spoke, I believe it was to CNN, but I can't remember exactly. It might have been CNBC. But he said that Nike did make an offer and Woods chose to walk away. And my interpretation of that, and I think this is the general interpretation, it's not special, is Nike made him an offer and Woods, looking probably at the entirety of his career, what he has meant to Nike, billions in sales, he's made a reported $500 million from them. I have no idea if that's true. That could just be pulled out of thin air. It often is in these types of things. But he's made a lot of money from Nike. I think it's safe to say, and well into the nine figures over a 30-year relationship. And he looked at the entirety of that and his value to Nike and Nike Golf, and then took this number into account and said, I think, one, I can make more, and two, I think after this amount of time, I'm not being offered compensation that's commensurate with what I've brought to the company. And Nike is in a state of flux right now. They're trying to cut costs at pretty much every level and every vertical. And this is kind of a way for them to sort of get out of a contract. They got out of the Jason Day contract. They did not renew that. They had him on staff for 8 years. Now he's over at Malbon Golf. They still have staffers. They have Scottie Scheffler and Rory McIlroy and Nelly Korda and Tony Finau. And they have important players that are under the Nike banner. But Tiger doesn't play a lot of golf. We know that, even though he has aspirations of playing monthly, so to speak, in the most important months of the year, this year and maybe beyond. We'll see what happens and if he can achieve that. But even if he does, we're talking 8 starts a year, 10 starts a year, that's max. That's not a lot of golf. Not a lot of golf for a 48-year-old guy. Not a lot of golf really for anybody. And Nike realizes they've already got this library of value of Woods' entire career wearing their stuff. So they've got that locked in no matter what, whether he wears it in 2024 and beyond. And Tiger probably said, look, I get where you're coming from. I'm not the same guy. I don't have the same influence. There's a new generation coming up. And I can probably still make a lot of money doing something else. And so that led to all of this. If you haven't seen the related social media posts, we have the announcement over at golfnewsnet.com. You can obviously read it on Twitter or X. But here's what Wood said in a picture that I thought wasn't the best use of the English language, I'll be honest with you, but it announces it. Over 27 years ago, I was fortunate to start a partnership with one of the most iconic brands in the world. The days since have been filled with so many amazing moments and memories. If I started naming them, I could go on forever. Phil Knight's passion and vision brought this Nike and Nike Golf partnership together, and I want to personally thank him, along with the Nike employees and incredible athletes I've had the pleasure of working with along the way. People ask if there is another chapter. Yes, there will certainly be another chapter. See you in LA. And obviously, Tiger's talking about see you in LA for the Genesis, which is next month. That's the tournament he hosts. It's a signature event. Presumably, he's going to play. I assume they'll find a way to get him in there. I really don't know how that works, but you would presume he could get himself in there somehow. And even if not, he's going to host the event. So that's the announcement. The part that confused me is people will ask if there is another chapter. Yes, there will certainly be another chapter. What I didn't understand about that in particular, and it feels kind of cryptic to me, but I don't know. Does that mean another chapter with Nike somewhere along the line someday? Does that mean he's going back to the Titleist umbrella, the Kushnet umbrella, because that's what he was before he became a Nike guy? So does that mean he's signing with FootJoy? Is he starting his own brand? I think he could do that in the vein of Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus and be more successful than either of them ever were in the apparel game, because Tiger still moves the needle, even though he's not a fashion icon. I mean, let's be honest. Tiger's fashion choices over the years have not been great. And frankly, neither all of ours have. But Tiger's has worn some special clothing over the years outside the rope. So don't think of him as a fashion icon. What's iconic about Tiger is black, red, and white on Sunday, and particularly the red shirt. And I don't think that's going anywhere, no matter where he goes next or what he chooses to do. That's what people associate with Tiger Woods. Everything else, eh. So if he chooses to go his own path and have his own brand, then I don't know if that's an opportunity for him to showcase how he views the world of fashion. Maybe he outsources it to somebody who is in touch with how he feels about apparel and kind of translates that into modern clothing. He could just as easily go to a Peter Millar or a FootJoy or a Grayson, or he could go to an up-and-coming brand, kind of like Roger Federer did after he and Nike parted ways. And Federer went and signed a huge deal with Uniqlo, which made him hundreds of millions of dollars. And he signed an equity deal with On Running and their shoes. And they blew up in that time frame, and that made him even more money. I don't know if there is a brand like that out there right now for Tiger to chase in golf. Maybe it's Grayson, but Grayson's done very well and has given out equity to some players. So maybe they don't need that, or maybe they recognize that's an opportunity to go even higher with Tiger. Grayson makes some great stuff. Charlie Woods wore it at the PNC Championship, sparking rumors that he might become an ambassador for Grayson as a high schooler. Just the same, it could just be maybe they were getting ready to bring on Tiger. I don't know. I really don't know what's going to happen. There are a lot of rumors out there. Tiger's generally pretty good about keeping a secret, and especially as it relates to business. So I would be reluctant to try to say any of those things is certainly going to happen. I think we'll get an announcement, obviously, in the next 30 days because we're getting ready for Genesis. He's going to be on the ground somewhere, and he's not just going to show up wearing Kirkland signature stuff or just some random brand. He will be decked out. Whatever that is, he will be decked out. So we'll find out sooner than later. But to me, this is a fascinating case study over 30 years. I think people will look back on it in the business community and sports representation community as an important deal. Phil Knight took, I wouldn't say a risk, but he knew what he was getting into with Tiger in terms of he thought he could change the world of professional golf. Signed him to, what, a five-year deal for $40 million, $8 million a year at the time. It was a huge amount of money in 1996, and they got their return back so quickly, it had to have been mind-blowing. And then ultimately went on for another 22 years beyond that. So pretty incredible relationship. I am kind of surprised over the years that Nike didn't find a way to create a Tiger Woods brand, not exactly the same way of the Jordan brand, but to create a deeper line, a more connective line to Woods, Nike, golf, than what they did. They would put out Tiger Woods clothes that frankly had slightly premium materials, but basically just looked like other Nike polos. And they would put out Tiger shoes, and they did okay, but I don't think they did enough in that department. And they always struggled on the hard goods side, even with Tiger playing it. Just golfers weren't going to buy Nike clubs, and they ultimately folded that in 2016. And Tiger still wore the apparel. The red shirt probably still sells. It's still going to sell, even though Tiger's no longer with the brand. And I think they got a lot out of it in terms of sales. I think they could have done better if they had done more to dedicate a brand to Tiger. Tiger is also reluctant in that kind of regard. I think he doesn't, or at least I haven't thought about him over the years in that way, as a guy who wanted to kind of take ownership of his apparel, but he was also getting paid very handsomely to wear someone else's, and they responded to his seemingly fairly basic needs. I think he understood that it was a less is more approach for him, even going back to the days of just establishing the red shirt. And once that was done, everything else was kind of unimportant. He could go wear basic colors and basic prints, and that worked for him. That consummated the deal really well. I still wish Nike would have done more, but hey, here we are. And they produced a ton of great commercials. The Frank the head cover thing, the video where he taps the ball in the wedge and then hits it out, which is amazing. I mean, they made some good spots. And for Tiger's sake, Nike stood by him in the worst times, and they made some really horrible commercials in trying to support him. When they had the video after Woods' infidelities all became public, and it's Woods just kind of staring in the camera, black and white, and there's Earl talking in the background about Tiger, and it almost seemed in a way like they were kind of condoning what he had done in his marriage, and that was kind of weird. Then there was the winning takes care of everything graphic that I think it was about 2012 when that came out, and kind of created this notion of, well, you can sweep everything under the rug if you're winning, which in a way is true, in a lot of ways is true, but they drew a lot of ire for that. And at the same time, they still did some great, great ads, great spots. And toward the end, it seemed like, I think Nike was in a state of flux golf-wise. They have been really since 2016. They had these staffers. They bring them on, take them off, bring them on, take them off. None of them have really helped establish the brand in a way. I mean, if Tiger couldn't do it, how could anyone else? And they took a lot of flack for taking chances on golf apparel that I think was unnecessary, the flack that they took. I liked the chances that they took. It didn't all work, but I did appreciate what they tried to bring to the game at times, especially really in 2020 and beyond. They kind of little COVID run 2020 through 2022. They put on some great shoes around each of the majors. They were interesting. They were different. They had themes. They were cool. And They seem to have gotten away from that a little bit. Probably a cost-cutting measure, and this is probably a cost-cutting measure too. So all that to say, I really don't know what happens next year. I've heard the rumors. You've probably heard some too. I don't have enough capital with Tiger Woods' camp to go ask him these kinds of questions and get any kind of answer other than we'll tell you when we want to tell everybody. And that's generally how it works. So there are some options on the table. I don't know what he has selected. I've tried to find out through third-party means and fourth-party means if there's a Tiger Woods brand on the horizon. I think it would do really well. But if just the same, he went and worked with a challenger brand that was trying to really establish itself in golf, they could strap themselves to Tiger, especially in the next couple of years, and give him some equity, and both of them potentially see a pretty sizable payoff there. So that would be my guess is where he goes. Doesn't start his own label, but if he does start his own, I promise you it's gonna crush it, kind of the way that Tom Brady's stuff, TB12, has worked out pretty well, although Tom Brady also has no fashion sense and the very boring kind of stuff. So there's a big risk in going out on your own, because then you've got to figure out how to design fashion. And that's not easy to do, especially when you have an athlete who's known for solid color blocks as your guys, your basis. So lots to find out. But yesterday was a momentous day in golf, I thought, and it was certainly interesting to me. And I don't know if it was to you, but I wanted to talk about it for a little while on this show. All right, second story for today relates to the Sony Open in Hawaii. It's the first full field event of the year, and for a long time, first full field event of the season on the PGA Tour. Now they've gone back to the calendar year system. They've got 34 tournaments, 35 tournaments, whatever it is, 34 weeks, I guess it is, and 37, 38 tournaments. But anyhow, now they've gone back to this system. The Sony Open in Hawaii is the first full field event of the year, and it gets started on Thursday. They had a Monday qualifier, at least attempted to play it yesterday. They're going to finish it today because there were torrential rains down out in Hawaii in the Honolulu area. So we do not have the four spot winners yet. They'll be added to the field once that gets all settled out, I assume, today. Great tournament. It's a fun one to watch. I love Wailea Country Club. Seth Rayner had a big influence on this golf course. I don't know truly if he had the full design. He certainly doesn't now, but he has a lot of it. It'd be pretty cool if they could actually do a restoration there. But it's a fun course to watch. Ends each nine on a par five. They do have that internal out of bounds on 18 now, so you can't just fly it over the adjoining of the adjacent hole to make it really easy to play 18. And the next kind of level of this tournament is not only that it's the season kickoff for a lot of players, but with the signature events being what they are now and drawing 10 to 15 players or so from the next signature event, from the three or four, whatever signature events that precede it, each of these or regular events that precede it, this takes on a little bit of a different meaning. So yeah, you're playing for nearly $1.5 million if you win, of course. But if you do well in this tournament or in the Amex or in the Torrey Pines event, depending on your FedEx Cup standing, and for this first set of three, they're the same, you're going to get yourself into a signature event. You're going to get yourself into Pebble and a $20 million opportunity with no cut. So you're getting a guaranteed 40 to 50K just for showing up in those tournaments. That's a big deal. And obviously the payoff could be so much more. So you have this event had always been oversubscribed because people want to go play in Hawaii. It's a good excuse and it's a good tournament. A lot of different types of players can win. You've seen bombers like Justin Thomas win. You've seen shorter players like Matt Kuchar win and everybody in between. It doesn't discriminate really. The greens are small. You've got to hit the greens and you've got to convert putts. You've got to hit it close. You've got to take advantage of the par fives. You've got to survive on the par threes. It's a good golf course. It really is, even though it's one of the shorter ones on the PGA Tour. Now, though, with the increased meaning that this tournament takes on, for players who are subject to the reshuffle. So those are players who are 126 to 150 in last year's FedEx Cup standings. The players who graduated from the Korn Ferry Tour, all 30 of them. The players who got a PGA Tour card from the DP World Tour's points list last year. The Q School guys, all those players are in the reshuffle. And any player worse than that in the FedEx Cup standings that earns FedEx Cup points. For those players, it's really important to get starts as often as possible. The problem is, as we talked about, with the additional meaning of these regular events, I think you're going to see some players play more. You're going to see players who want to get in those signature events play a little bit more. That means you're going to get some more named players, but that also means it's going to be much more difficult for the rookie, the reshuffle player, to get into a lot of these tournaments really before you get to the Florida Swing. And that's going to be a tricky proposition. And it has become apparent this week. So Brentley Romine is covering this story for Golf Channel, and he did a good job with it. I don't think he's at Hawaii, but I'm not sure. But the deal here is, for rookies and reshuffle players on the PGA Tour, they really don't have a good chance of getting in this tournament. As Brentley points out, there are 28 true rookies on the PGA Tour. Less than half of them got into the Sony Open. And the rest of them who had to make the trip because they needed to attend rookie orientation, which is being held at the Royal Hawaiian Resort on Waikiki Beach. And the PGA Tour did agree to pay for these players to fly commercial to Hawaii and attend the session. I don't know why they didn't do it over Zoom. That's a whole other matter entirely. But the orientation began last weekend, included a dinner on Saturday night. They had a Sunday breakfast. They had time out on the ocean lawn in the evening. They had all kinds of breakout sessions, media training. I don't know why you do that, cram that into a day. There's a lot that goes on there. And the tour is covering lodging and the round-trip airfare, which, that's good for the dozen players who are going to try, that are rookies, they're going to try to Monday qualify. Well, now Tuesday qualify. And there are three that just chose they're not going to do it. They're just going to be there and then go. But they are in a really awkward situation because last year, all 50 Korn Ferry Tour and Korn Ferry Tour graduates, we don't have Korn Ferry Tour finals graduates, all 50 of them, the 25 of each, they got in last year, including the 50th player, who's Kyle Westmoreland last year. This year, there are only 30, right? Because there's no Korn Ferry Tour finals. Only 14 of those players got in. Jimmy Stanger, who was number 15, got a sponsor invite, as did Josh Teeter, who's been on the tour for a number of years and has built some good relationships, is a good guy. So the alternate list is filled with guys who are rookies. Norman Jeong, Nicholas Lindheim's not a rookie, Joe Highsmith, Patrick Fishburne, Mac Meisner. I mean, those are guys who were on the Korn Ferry Tour last year. Mac Meisner shot a 59. And 11 of the 14 Korn Ferry Tour graduates that are not in the Sony Field, and 4 of the 5 Q School grads are playing in that or in the field for the qualifier. There's an 81 or 83 player field for that qualifier, which was basically double the field from last year. And all of that leads me to believe that there's going to be some more competition here. It's going to be tougher for some of these players to get into fields. And PGA Tour status out of Korn Ferry Tour school or Korn Ferry Tour season will not mean as much. Same thing for the guys from the DP World Tour. The same thing for the guys who got out of Q school. And that's an awkward situation because the tour thought most of these players would get in. And what wound up happening, they have 20 top 50 players from the OWGR in the field. That's way more than prior years. And also, most of the players who finished 51st through 125th in the FedEx Cup points signed up because there's no wraparound schedule. You can't have a head start. You can't play the first 7 or 9 events anymore, rack up points, and then just kind of relax for a little while. That doesn't happen anymore. Now you got to start right away. And all of a sudden, this becomes very difficult. And so for the players who don't get a lot of starts early, they're going to have to make their run later in the year, after June. Once you get into late June and July and August, early August, you're going to run into opportunities for these players to get in the field, because to a degree, the players who know they're going to get in the playoffs, that top 70, they can kind of start to relax a little bit after a long run. Then it's time for the guys who need to kind of creep in. And it's going to be very awkward. It's going to be really awkward. So all that to say, the value of having a PGA Tour card is maybe a little bit less this year because there are fewer tournaments. There's more incentive to play a regular event if you are not in the top 50 from last year's FedEx Cup or not in top 50 of the official World Golf Ranking. And there will certainly be stretches where that's not as much of an issue, but at least at the start of the season, it will be. Fortunately for the players in these field or in this situation, the next couple of events are opportunities to play for them because the American Express is played over 3 courses. You get 168 players because of that pro-am opportunity. And then also at Torrey Pines, you're playing on 2 courses. So you get a full field there too, so you get some extra spots. And as daylight gets longer, you don't have 144 player tournaments like you do in the early portion of the year. You get to 156 player tournaments. Those extra 12 players do mean a lot. And that means opportunities for more guys in this group. But it will be very interesting to see, and something to follow the entire season, how this all works out for those guys. That's going to do it for us today on the show. I appreciate it. Thanks for spending some time with me. We'll be back tomorrow with another show. If you have any questions, get a hold of me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. I'm on Twitter, Threads, X, Instagram, Blue Sky @RyanBallenge. I'm on Facebook and YouTube @RyanBallenge Golf. Thanks for listening. Catch you tomorrow on 2 of the 1st.